Hey, everybody, we're going to pick up our conversation we started last week. So if you haven't listened to last week's episode, go back and listen to that episode, and then you can listen to this episode. This is part two of a two-part series. I hope you enjoy. Welcome to The Friday Habit with Mark Labriola and Benjamin Manley. The Friday Habit is for small business owners, freelancers, and creatives who are ready to take their business to the next level. Join us as we discover how to apply the strategies we learn to grow our businesses, make more money, and live every day like it's Friday. Yeah, you know, the other thing I was thinking about too, that also as you grow, I think as a creative, I know for me, there's like certain things that I want a certain way, you know, or like I've developed my eye in a particular way and I want things a certain way. But the thing that I found sometimes, you know, if you want to remove yourself from a process, you have to be okay with good enough, you know, like you have to be able to look at something and say, you know what, this isn't maybe, and maybe there's two ways you can approach it, because I kind of approach it both ways, where sometimes I'll go into a situation and say, hey, next time let's do this, this, and this. You know, but hey, that's great. And I think by doing that, you allow yourself to trust other people to come along in that process so that it can help you grow. Because if I'm constantly in, you know, the weeds on certain things and trying to micromanage how they're getting done, and they're being done exactly the way that I like to do them and how I do them, it just slows things down. And so it's like getting to a place where you can trust other people and then being okay with, you know, like it being good enough. Like, yeah, you know what? That's good enough. And if I can coach that person into trying to get better, but I can't always expect people to be exactly like me or have the exact same style or eye as I have. And I have to be okay with, is the client happy? Is the client, you know, pleased with this? Then that's good enough, you know?
That's a really good point, Mark, because I had somebody that I did work for like 8 years ago now. And at that point in time, you know, this person had the viewpoint, and this person's a creative, they're a graphic designer. You know, like, I'm the only one that can sell my own service. And that's a huge problem when you're the only person that can sell your own service and deliver your own service. And in that period of time, like, I went from having a business idea to having a few employees, you know, having a decent sized team, and that person's still trying to handle the same problem of, you know, right, I can't sell my own service. And I think unless you get over that idea of good enough, man, like a lot of times it can just keep you small. Like that's a huge point. It's a great point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Listen, I'm glad that things are going good for you. What other things do you have going on? I noticed on YouTube, I've noticed recently you've kind of started posting some interesting content that's kind of different than you have in the past. I'm curious to hear your reasoning behind that, or like, yeah, if you've looked into some algorithms and you know, like, oh, people talking about education or MAGA or politics or whatever gets really good engagement, so we need to start creating that kind of content. I noticed maybe, are you using AI for some of your thumbnails?
We're using vidIQ, which has been incredible for AI thumbnails, dude. It's awesome. And I'll be honest with you, the content change was literally, my wife said, okay, the stuff you tell me in private and you complain about on a daily basis, either make a podcast about it or stop talking to me about it. So that's actually where the content change came from. And it was even to the point of, hey, this isn't a great marketing decision for you. And I'm like, hey, but I'm enjoying myself. So yeah, a lot of the content change was literally just because, like, I felt like I needed an outlet of what I've complained about since I was 12 years old. And that's kind of been, you know, a lot of the shift in content for me. But I've went heavy on like AI tools for podcasting, because mm-hmm. I found that production can be crazy expensive if you're trying to create a good product. So we started figuring out, like, what are the right AI tools to build a process mm-hmm. off of. So we started using a plugin for Premiere Pro. It's called Autopod. Uh-huh. And you can actually put in different camera views. And for us, we use one of the guests, one of the hosts, and the guest and host side by side. And we mm-hmm. have it create like a three camera edit for us. And you do that, and it does it for you in about 30 seconds, and that's, you get an edited file out. And then we run it through another software called video.ai, and that creates a lot of the clips for us and things like that. Mm-hmm. And then you mentioned, like, hey, it looks like you're using some AI thumbnails. We've been using vidIQ's added a lot of different tools recently too, like one that can actually look at your title, description, and tags, and from that it can actually give you some thumbnail ideas. Okay. Some of them are way off, and I'm like, what is it thinking? And other times I'm like, wow, these are really good. So we've started using a lot more of those. One thing I am really excited for, because, like, dude, I've gone so deep down the YouTube rabbit hole of figuring out, like, what makes a video do good, what makes a video do bad, like, what, how does watch time get better, what, why does my click rate, click-through conversion matter? There's a feature coming out from YouTube, and then they said quarter one, so I don't know when that is. We're in quarter one now, so soon would be great. That actually you're going to be able to upload anywhere from 2 to 4 thumbnails at the same time. Mm-hmm. And then natively, YouTube's actually going to do A-B test of thumbnails. Oh, and you can see which one has the best click-through rate. So I'm actually excited for that. For me, I've just been going deep on the technology of, like, how does it work, which is wild because I feel like I should have been doing video like 4 years ago. But, you know, I guess it's a good time to start now.
Yeah, it's always a good time to start. And I think that's one thing that can kind of differentiate you from everyone else, right, is having video. And then also, I feel like you connect, I think you connect with someone that you can see, you know, it's like when you can see them, I think you can feel, you know, just a little bit of more of who they are. Like you were rocking a fat old mustache, like, you know.
Oh, like my wife would not kiss me for 4 months, so I had to get rid of it.
Dude, that was a legit stash, dude. Like, so thick. I'm like, dang, like, he may not have gotten the height, but he got the stash. Like, he was born in the wrong era. He should have been in the 70s.
I was getting people tell me that I look too much like my dad now because my dad's had like this like walrus mustache my entire life, like Wilford Brimley or something like that.
Nice. That's so awesome.
Genetic. Nice.
Yeah, my son's trying to grow a mustache and I'm like, but you know, he's got that little puby mustache that, you know, is thin and, you know, just doesn't.
Well, dude, I have very thin facial hair, so that took me a good like 2 months to grow. There was a lot of work involved in creating that mustache.
Yeah, I mean, but I just couldn't believe how dense it was. Like, if you have trouble growing hair, I mean, you could have fooled me. Our one of our producers, our engineer James, he can't grow good facial hair, but he can grow a really good stash. Like, but you know, again, yeah, his wife wouldn't kiss him. He kind of looks like Hitler a little bit. Yeah, I don't know. It's not good.
I saw that this thing recently, and it was like all these different mustaches like laid out, and they're like, this one is the handlebar. This one is the walrus. They're like, this one is the toothbrush. I'm like, the toothbrush kind of looks like a Hitler mustache. Is that what they're calling it now?
Yeah, it's politically correct to say toothbrush. So with the, so with this content, I'm curious just about, I mean, it seems in some ways, I feel like I'm always afraid to talk about politics, or I'm afraid to talk about any polarizing thoughts or ideas because, although I am opinionated and I have strong opinions about things, I also like, I care about people. And if I say, oh, I align with X, Y, and Z, I might feel like I might be isolating someone. And so for me, I always feel like, ah, you know what? They say, don't talk about politics and sex, you know, like just leave those things out of family get-togethers and you'll be okay. And I feel kind of the same way.
I guess somebody should have told my uncle to not talk about sex at the table then. I don't know.
the uncle. But you know what I'm saying? Like, and especially too, as a service-based business, it's like, okay, we service all sorts of people. You know, I service, you know, people who are like conservative and Democrats and you know, liberal and independent, like Christian, non-Christian, atheists, like all these things. And so I feel like if I talk about too much of one thing, that might isolate or be bad for business or whatever that might be. Did you have any fears about kind of this, a little bit of this stuff you're talking about at all?
I think, Mark, because there's a way to do it. And I think there's a lot of people, especially if you're on Twitter, there's a lot of people that are like really abrasive about it. And it's just like, what are you trying to achieve other than get people to click on that? Like I was on a podcast last week where I had a political conversation with somebody that is, you know, we're on opposite sides of the aisle. It was one of the best conversations I've ever had. Because I'm a big believer that if you can have conversations where iron sharpens iron and it forces both of us to have a better, you know, better viewpoint, or it shows us that our viewpoints don't work, I think there's a lot of value in that. And the thing I've found, because for me, like, sure, I'm more right of center, but what I've tried to do is look at issues for what's there and try and give people like, hey, this is what the game board of life currently looks like. Mm-hmm. And based on that, you know, these are, you know, decisions you should consider making. So I've actually found, like, for us, we work with a lot of CEOs and founders, and a lot of them are like, you know, like, hey, I found that economic trends one you did like really helpful because that helped me to decide, like, you know, like, what should I know about hiring or things like that? So for me, I'm actually finding I'm getting really good feedback from people that want to know certain things about trends and certain things about what's happening in culture, because that affects, you know, their business building ideas too. So I think there's a way to have that conversation. But I think there's a lot of people, like, especially on Twitter, that are having the conversation in a way that was like, I don't know, like, it feels like Mortal Kombat, where it's like, finish him. And it's just like, what are you know, like, get over here. Like, and it's not really like, right. See? It's like, it's not really like how it, I couldn't help myself. It's like, that's not really like tactical. Mm-hmm. And now I will say, G.K. Chesterton did say that the only two things to talk about are politics and religion. So. I don't know, man. I think it is. It's life, and I think sometimes we have to have uncomfortable conversations to be able to come to agreements or disagreements on things.
Yeah, and you know, they say there's the riches and the niches. I think too, there's this element of, I think a lot of times people don't talk about certain things, whereas religion, politics, sex, whatever those things are, right? And then they're not really being true to themselves, you know. And then they're kind of hindering what their full potential is because they're being so guarded. And I think people connect with that authenticity, and you'll kind of build your tribe around, you know, around you. And I mean, I think Joe Rogan's a great example of that, right? Where he was someone who was like a liberal person in Hollywood, comedian, whatever, but then he also had conservative ideas, and he wasn't afraid to kind of talk about all those things and just lay them out there. And then now, I mean, he's the biggest podcast in the world, and, you know, one of the someone who has, I would say, a lot of like power behind what he does and guests that he has on and marketing and all those other kind of things. So
well, that's the beauty in podcasting, though, man. Like, we can have a lot of these big conversations, and like, it allows people to really describe what they're thinking, feeling, and doing, rather than just being like innately polarizing, which I think is a lot of what TV does to us. And I think that's what's really cool about podcasting.
Yeah, I agree. And it gives that long form conversation, you know, to happen, because I think the soundbite is where you can get in trouble, right? It's when you only have like a 30-second spot on a news, you know, network in order to get your idea out. And then it's like instantly you can be judged on that, but there's nuance to everything. And I think, these long form conversations, that's where like the nuance happens. And I appreciate that, because for me too, I always feel like that I'm open to changing my ideas, you know, like if you can give a better argument to me of why X, Y, and Z, like I'm open to change the way I think about something, you know? And so
I'm a husband, man. We have to figure out how to change our ideas quite often. So I'm also open.
And all you can do is just pray that they someday see the way the things they should be seen. But
I will tell you though, Mark, like, speaking of sound bites though, the one thing I am kind of terrified of is like a lot of these AI voice clips going around, because they're like really good. Yeah. So that's the one thing that's kind of terrifying. Like, I just for sake of time was trying to save time on doing an audio version of the latest book that I wrote. So I used 11 Labs as voice cloner. Okay. And I had it actually do my audiobook.
Really?
And nobody that I know and I have known my entire life actually knew it wasn't me. That's the scary part.
Really?
I think it's perfect for that type of thing where you are supposed to speak in a consistent way.
Yes.
I think that you're like, when you're talking on a podcast, you're very emotive and you're like talking high, loud, quiet. I think that's harder to copy right now. Someday it'll probably be easier to copy, but I was going to say, but for audiobooks, it's like, that's a perfect use case for that kind of thing.
Dude, it saved me so much time. And then I listened to it, I'm like, sounds like me. Yeah. So I just hope that me doesn't say anything terrible that I have to know about.
It wasn't me. It was my AI.
Yep.
Someone
can you imagine in the next like 6 months to a year that a celebrity does something terrible and says, oh, my AI did it?
Yeah. I mean, we're not too far away from it. It's pretty crazy. Yeah. So we use a program called Speechify to do some voiceover work. So depending on the kind of video that we need, the Speechify, you can have it be like thoughtful and earnest when it's, you know, talking, and then, you know, just adding some commas and some periods and long breaths and things like that. It comes really convincing, and then it saves on time and money too. So AI definitely is one of those things where I don't know where it's leading in the sense of, like, I don't know what the end game, because all I see is Terminator 2 Judgment Day, where it's like, well, I just see me holding onto a fence turning into a, you know, mist of bones.
But hey, where's John Connor?
Yeah.
Bring me to him, Mark Labrador II. Where is John Connor?
But you know, that's the thing, is I feel like you need to embrace the AI stuff, because I don't think it's going anywhere. And when used properly, it's making things more efficient. And I do feel bad for a lot of jobs out there, like, mm-hmm. you know, copywriters and some of this voiceover stuff, right? Like, even show notes and things like that for podcasts. We had someone who was doing our show notes, but now AI does it better than that person and is like $40 a month instead of like $400 a month. And so yeah. It's kind of one of those things where it's like, why would I keep paying for that when I can get it in this service, you know?
Well, I think efficiency is a big part of it. I think there's people that try to use it in like a lazy way. But I think if you could figure out how to be more efficient with it, it's really valuable. And I think the thing you have to consider as well, like, you look at the Industrial Revolution, and that like changed everything. And I think AI is a very similar thing to even, you know, what the internet did, right? Like, mm-hmm. we had businesses that disappeared, new ones that created. And I think at the same time, where you see losses, you're going to see brand new verticals and markets created that we didn't even know could exist. So mm-hmm. I think right now, while we're kind of in this new era, you are going to see some people losing jobs. You are going to see some of those things happening. But I think you're going to see brand new things invented, right? Like, mm-hmm. you know, maybe you'll have people that have a new idea on how to train AIs, and that's now a new career. So I think you'll have all these career paths that could open if people just figure out how to be more efficient from the way AI is used.
Yeah, totally. And I feel like it's gonna separate it'll allow people who maybe have ideas and creativity to be able to execute on some of those things that maybe they couldn't before because they didn't have the skills. I mean, I think about even when Google kind of became really prominent, you know, in the early 2000s, I was able to do my job and do things I could never do because I had Google. You know, it was like I was a PC support specialist, and I never had any formal training, but I could Google a problem and then see how to fix it, and then I could go fix it, you know? And so yeah. It was like, that was a way of me using a tool in order to solve a problem. And I always thought, like, you know, the person who's calling for this PC support ticket, like, they could just Google it too and just do the thing that I did. I didn't know how to do what they needed, you know, 5 minutes before they called, you know, but they called and then I figured it out and went and solved the problem. And I think that, you know, those are the kind of people who are like, oh, I don't like technology and I don't, you know, want to do X, Y, and Z. It's like, well, if you don't move along with the times, like, the times are just going to kind of move over you, you know? And then it's like, yeah, you're a copywriter who's not engaging with ChatGPT because you're like, oh, I'm a purist. Like, you know, I do X, Y, and Z. But it's like, could you be more efficient? Could you be, you know, offer more services? Could you offer, you know, more complex things if you use these tools to help you do your job better? And I think, yeah, you should probably embrace it. My only fear, though, is that there is that laziness about it where it's just you plug it in and then it delivers something back to you. And I think as a creative, it's like, well, this isn't really creating anything. It's just taking what's ever been said or printed or published, and then it's rearranging it to fit what your request is. And so I do feel like, is there going to be an end to that at some point? Like it's absorbed all the knowledge that we've had up to this point. So like, how is it going to get new knowledge? You know,
I just have this terrifying vision of humans turning into these things that are kind of like slugs, and you're sitting on your chair and you're like, Alexa, get me something right now. I'm playing Madden with my eyes. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I just, there is that part of me that's a little bit.
You know, they're floating around in the chairs and they're just like, they're just, you know, watching screens.
But here's the exciting thing about this, and this is what I actually think is exciting, is the more we go towards that, the more people want and will pay a premium for things that are innately human, right?
Yeah.
So a really good copywriter has a ton of value because, number one, they're good. But number two, there's so much more value on that now because the regular version is so available, right? So like, mm-hmm. now you're going to take even less clients and you're going to charge even more. Mm-hmm. You know, just like a good artist, like, sure, we're using AI thumbnails out there. But if you look at AI artwork, dude, it doesn't have a soul. And right. I think that is the difference when you look at somebody that's a real artist and a real designer. Like, there's soulfulness to that. There's something to that. And I think that actually makes somebody that's really good at that more of a premium. So I think at the same time, there's also a little bit of that as well that you're going to see.
Yeah. Have you watched those, those AI videos that were recreated like in the style of Wes Anderson? You know, it's like Star Wars in the style of Wes Anderson. Have you seen any of those?
Oh, is that like ElsaGate? Like that thing?
I don't know what ElsaGate is, but if you get it,
they trained an AI to like look at what people watch on YouTube and then like take the most popular things and stick them together. So it was like Disney princesses like hanging out with Hitler biographies while they like dated Spider-Man or something. It was some like wild thing that they were trying to figure out to get watch hours.
Yeah, no, I have never heard of that, but there's all these Wes Anderson like movies where they have all these prominent actors, you know, that are sketched out. There's a handful of them out there, so it's worth checking out and watching. Just like
they did
Google.
One with George Carlin recently where they're like, oh, it's a George Carlin AI stand-up, and it like,
oh yeah,
number
like
one, they didn't have his
and stuff.
Yeah, but they didn't have his style like at all.
Yeah,
and it didn't really sound, it sounded like him if he had a nasal infection. So like, I just, you know what I mean, it wasn't there for me,
right? But it will be interesting because I heard that Bruce Willis went, you know, because he's kind of he has some sort of degenerative disease, and so he can't act anymore. And I think he's, you know, on the verge of passing away or something like that. And he can't really, you know, think for himself. But I guess he signed something of his likeness or image away so that they could use, like, if they wanted to make like a Die Hard, you know, 6, they could essentially, you know, use his like likeness in order to create that movie, and he could make money, which would be interesting.
Could you imagine how contract law is going to change, man? Like, because these are things that like you didn't have to consider. Like I know the first one to do this is going to be freaking Disney, because they're going to be oh, you guys do all of our voices. We own you all now. Like I just took my kids last month to see Disney on Ice, and they use all the voices of all the characters, but those characters, like, they're not there. They're not recording for it. Right. So like, can you imagine how contract law is going to change for this stuff?
Oh, I know. It's going to be crazy because, I mean, yeah, you've heard some of those Kanye remakes and those different songs that have been produced, like, because essentially they'll be like a rapper who uses Kanye's voice and he writes his own rap, but then uses Kanye's voice over his beat and stuff. And it's like, at what point is that copyright infringement, right? Like, at what point is somebody's likeness or their voice or whatever that is, like, encroaching on how they make money, right? And how they... it's going to be interesting. I don't know where, like I said, I don't know where it all leads. Because obviously it's just going to exponentially like keep going. I mean, essentially we'll all be in our Apple Vision Pros and having this podcast, you know, where our avatars are talking to each other and we're visiting other places in the world and we never want to leave our little apartments and we're just eating bugs and like, you know, we're just being, you know.
There was I watched this thing with a chef that like uses bugs in his cooking and stuff recently. Dude, it was the most disgusting thing I've ever seen. You're not going to get media bugs. It's just not happening.
No, I'm not down for the bugs. My middle son, he loves a good like challenge, a food challenge. And there was like some dried crickets that he ate because he was like, oh, this would be ridiculous. He ate the dried crickets.
Dude, I'm like mostly Irish. We eat potatoes and meat, and that's pretty much it.
That's it. You said you had a pig. What is the pig for? Are you going to make it into bacon at some point, or is it just like
a
family
pig? He's my
pig?
Son. No, he's my son.
Dude. He's
a little overweight because he's like, you know, 140 pounds now. He's hard to pick up. But he's a good boy. If you don't feed him fast enough, he will bite your feet.
Okay.
But he walks around the yard all day, digging some holes with his nose, looking for acorns. So he's having a good life, man. He's living his best life.
I mean, is there an end game for him, or does he just have a heart attack and then you just bury him in the backyard?
One day, man, those coronary arteries get a little too hard from all the food he's been eating, and that's kind of the end of it.
Okay, you won't eat him?
I don't know that I could. Like, so my one of my mother-in-law's chickens got attacked by a hawk recently. So my brother-in-law, the same day, plucked the feathers and cooked the thing and fed it to my kids. I don't know if I could do that because, like, you spend the time raising these animals. I would feel weird about it.
I hear
be
you.
Be like, no, don't eat Phyllis. That's Phyllis the chicken. Don't eat her.
Well, I see. We were on a shoot once. This was like in Washington. And we were at this farmer's property and we were hanging out and they had us over for lunch. and we're eating this like spaghetti with this meat and all this stuff. And they're like, oh, you know, like, do you like the meal? I'm like, oh, this is delicious. Yeah. They're like, yeah, that's one of our pigs. And it's like, oh, that's cool. Yeah. It's Fruit Loop. And it was like, what do you mean? It's like, oh yeah, that was the pig's name. It was Fruit Loop, you know, because our daughter had this like experiment that she was doing for 4-H where we only fed this pig Fruit Loops like 100% to see if it would affect the flavor or taste of it. And it didn't taste like Fruit Loops. No, it tasted just like delicious pork. But there was something I felt a little interesting about eating a animal that it knew its name. But then in the same way, I feel like as Americans, we should be more like connected to our food because then we might respect it more. You know,
yeah, we're just like, too disconnected from our food. I agree with that.
Yeah. And so it's like, I think if you maybe eat less meat, not because you're told that it's better for the environment, blah, 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 but because it's like you're more connected to like, oh, wow, this is a life that I'm taking in order to like sustain myself. Like, let me do less of that, you know?
And I agree with you because I go through like 10 pounds of chicken a week on my own. I can't imagine what would go through if those were my chickens. But, you know, as far as I know, I don't know them. They don't have names. Like, chicken breast should not be that large. Like, so anyway, like, yeah, anyway.
You still crushing the, 80 grams of protein a day. And there you go. Sun's out, guns
out.
Not
like I used to, though, man. Like, in my 20s, I was 215. I'm like 160 now, but I'm pretty happy being there.
Yeah, because you were doing the powerlifting stuff, right, and doing all those things, so you really had to bulk up. What about I feel like there's this huge trend, right, of like the 4 a.m. wake ups, the cold showers, like, you know, just being the entrepreneur of entrepreneurs. I feel like some of that culture, it's kind of like the hustle and grind culture, like the Gary Vaynerchuk of like, you know, you need to be like grinding. Like, I feel like things are starting to soften up around entrepreneurial industry, and like, have you seen any of that as well? Like, kind of,
I don't understand the 4 a.m. wake up thing, man. Like there is no human that should be awake that early. Like, I just,
because
like,
Jeremy, if you're up at 4, your competition's not waking up till 8, so you got 4 hours on them. You're working 2 extra days in one day.
Yeah, well, guess what? I don't put in the wrong amount for a payment because I'm awake. Make less mistakes because I sleep.
That's right. Yeah.
Well, for me, like, I've always been like, looked at things for efficiency. Like, I've been doing cold showers before they were cool just because they wake you the hell up.
Yeah.
You know, and there's definitely some health benefits. I don't know why everybody and their brother has like a cold dunk tank right now.
Yeah.
Like, and my thought process is like, dude, like, I know it's winter, so you can do that now. What are you going to do in the summer? It's just a swimming pool otherwise. Like, you know what I mean? Like, but I see a lot of people doing that. I don't know. I think things are changing quite a bit. Like, for me, the only reason I run and stuff early and stuff like that is because I want to have breakfast with my kids. That's about it. But yeah. I don't know. Like, for me, I do what works for me. I'm usually up at like 6:30, 7 o'clock, take a run, not a crazy run because I'm not a crazy runner, but I'll do like a mile every day. I work out and then I come back and have breakfast with my kids. That's for me, that's the only reason I'm doing things at like at that time of day, just because life gets away with you by the time you get through the day. And, you know, I want to have some time with my family in the morning.
Totally. Are your kids homeschooling or?
They are. The first is 5. So we just kind of started with like alphabet and stuff like that.
Okay.
And she had a lot of fun with my wife. We have our third one on the way in June. So life's going to get a little more
congratulations.
Crazy. So thank you, man. It's going to be a little
good
crazier.
Number. I'm a big fan of the number 3. And 3 kids is like the perfect balance. But you know what? Listen, you're a good person. You're a good man. And the more children that you can have to like populate our society and train them up in a positive way, I will encourage you to have as many kids as you can.
I don't want to have more than 3, man. Like, at this point in time, like, they could go Lord of the Flies on me and like take over the house. And like,
right.
I don't want to have that option like too much,
happened,
you know?
To Jeremy? Oh, his kids murdered him and now they're using AI to like make videos on his channels.
Yo, there was this guy in Pennsylvania. And his crazy ass kid that's been suing the government for a few years because they let him take out a student loan, he beheaded his father. Did you see this in the news?
No. What?
Yeah, this guy in Pennsylvania. And then he was on YouTube and he put up a video and he's like, and this is my father's head.
No.
You didn't see this in the news? Dude,
no.
You gotta Google the story.
Oh,
because
I don't
then
know
YouTube,
if I want to now.
Well, you don't have to watch the video, just read the article. But then YouTube, like, left the video up for an entire day. And it's like, YouTube takes down videos for anything. And they're like leaving up the video of the kid talking about his father's severed head.
Oh man, that is dark.
Sorry, man. I can't help it.
That's good. That's good. But dude, great catching up with you and talking. And where can people connect with you if they want to find out more? If there's some executive that's like, I need someone to book me on shows, Jeremy's your guy. Where do they go?
We got a great book out there right now for everybody that wants to figure out like how to utilize podcasts and get the most out of them. And we've actually got that. It's for free. You just got to pay the shipping. So if you head over to bestpodcastbook.com, you can grab that. And you can also find all the ways to connect with us as well. So bestpodcastbook.com, you can learn how to utilize podcasts and make a big impact, man.
Awesome. Ben, what are your takeaways for today's episode?
All right. Number one, pigs are friends, not food. Number two, I got a couple here. I was going to say one thing that stood out to me when we were talking was I liked your idea of considering how to basically asking each of your teammates in different roles and different teams how they can contribute income to the business. I think that's a really good tip. That's a good way for me. Think about even
nobody considers that, man. They're always looking at the owner like, how are we going to make more money?
Right. It's like traditionally, it's the owner's responsibility, but getting them involved in it and also non-traditionally income generating positions. That's a good idea to ask them about that. So good takeaway there. And then I also really liked what you said about having a mindset of building processes, not just doing the work. And then the last one was just if you're measuring the right stats, like for example, fully created quality products is what you're measuring, then remote work can be more efficient than in-office work.
And if you could leave one tip, Jeremy, to our audience who's listening, how they can better themselves, better their business, or one thing that really has helped you be successful in your business starting next week, what would that one thing of advice be?
I make it simple, man. I would say subscribe to the Friday Habit. That would be the lesson, man. You will get everything you need on the Friday Habit. So that would be my one piece of advice.
Oh, thanks, dude. You're the best. Hey, with that, go to thefridayhabit.com to find show notes for this episode. And there you can also find links to our websites and ways to get in touch. And at the bottom of the page, you can download our guide to the Friday Habit system that will show you how to set aside one full day each week dedicated to working on your business instead of in your business.
And if you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe, just like Jeremy said, and leave us a review in the Apple Podcasts app. If you have a question or topic you'd like us to cover, don't forget to record us a quick voice memo and email it to hello@thefridayhabit.com.
That's right. And until next time, live every day like it's Friday.